Thank you for listening to this Microbe Talk, a Sustainable Future series special. This is the third and final episode of a three-part series dedicated to the role of microbiology in achieving the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, more commonly known as the SDGs. The SDGs are a collection of 17 goals which aim to produce a fairer, more prosperous, and sustainable world by 2030. Microbiology plays an important role in addressing many of these goals, including those related to antimicrobial resistance, soil health, and the circular economy. So far, we've heard from my colleagues Hannah and Eva from the policy team to find out about members working at the forefront of microbiology research and innovation in soil health and the circular economy. If you haven't had a chance to listen yet, I highly recommend you check them out. This episode, Policy Officer Emily will be learning about the critical roles that microbes play in providing and regulating ecosystem services, treating infections, and controlling public health threats in the context of antimicrobial resistance. We want to thank all experts who have taken part in this series for their time and invaluable insights, and we hope you enjoy listening to the series as much as we've enjoyed putting it together.
Thank you for joining us today as we discuss the importance of antimicrobial resistance, also known as AMR, for the Sustainable Development Goals, and the crucial role that microbiology plays in this area. As we will hear in more detail during this episode, AMR is a barrier to achieving many of the Sustainable Development Goals, including Goal 1, No Poverty, Goal 2, Zero Hunger, Goal 3, Good Health and Wellbeing, and Goal 8, Decent Work and Economic Growth. Today, we will be talking to two scientists working in the area of AMR, Professor Laura Piddock from the University of Birmingham and Dr. Anne Leonard from the University of Exeter. Our first guest today is Professor Laura Piddock, who is a Professor of Microbiology at the University of Birmingham and seconded as the Director of Scientific Affairs at the Global Antibiotic Research and Development Partnership, GARDP. She will be talking to us about her work on multi-drug efflux pumps, which are bacterial pumps that export antibiotics, and how engaging with stakeholders can benefit science. Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's great to have you on the podcast. Can you tell me a bit about where you work and the focus for your research?
So I work in two places. I work at the University of Birmingham as Professor of Microbiology, and there I carry out research on drug resistance, in particular focusing on multi-drug resistance efflux pumps. And over the last few years, we've been focusing on what are the switches that turn the pumps on and off, i.e. regulation, and also how can we use that information to identify inhibitors of efflux. My second job is as Director of Scientific Affairs at the Global Antibiotic Research and Development Partnership in Geneva, GARDP.
From leading your own research group to directing scientific affairs at GARDP, you have had many AMR-related roles. How have the Sustainable Development Goals impacted your work?
The fact that antimicrobial resistance affects everybody, irrespective of where they live or what they do, means that if drug-resistant infections continue to proliferate and impact on people, then this affects health, agriculture, animals, the environment, and food production. So in the same way as COVID-19 is having a massive impact, the same is true for drug-resistant infections.
So how do you think microbiology can help us tackle the spread of drug-resistant microbes and epidemics?
So the way of tackling AMR is several-fold. The first thing is to know how much drug resistance really affects the treatment of infections. So whilst we know there's many different types of drug-resistant bacterial species, many different drug-resistance genes, what we do know is not all of them impact upon treatment. So it's really important to know where drug-resistant bacteria are, the drugs that are affected by resistance, and whether this genuinely causes treatment failure.
Your previous work on multi-drug efflux pumps found in Salmonella was used by governmental agencies to see the impact of antibiotic use in animals on human health. Can you tell us a bit more about how researchers can have an impact and engage with policymakers?
Our work on both Campylobacter and Salmonella was used, in particular that of fluoroquinolone resistance, where these drugs were used in both animals and humans and still are in some parts of the world. And what we showed was that it didn't matter where the bacterium came from, whether it's an animal or a human, the type of resistance was exactly the same. So that was really important information. And by liaising with policymakers and politicians, it was very clear that we needed to use very clear examples of how this was affected. And fluoroquinone resistance was one of the easiest examples to show, because for other types of drug resistance, there's always been this discussion that, well, the strains that are found in animals are different to those in humans. And for foodborne pathogens, this was a much more straightforward example to use.
As part of your segment at GARDP, you were involved with Revive, an initiative aiming to connect and educate people with an interest in antibiotic research and development, including through the sharing of information and training materials. Why do you think it is important to raise awareness of AMR and engage with the public?
Well, Revive is aimed firstly at researchers of all areas, so not just those that are established researchers on AMR, particularly drug discovery, research and development and new treatments, but everybody, other scientists who may have something to offer but didn't realise, but also general public policymakers and politicians. It's really important that people have accurate scientific information. And there are many articles written in the lay media and even the scientific press, but not necessarily scientific or medical publications, that overinterpret information or misinterpret information. So what we've been doing with Revive is getting experts to share their wisdom, their expertise, their understanding of particular topics. And we do this either in webinars or in viewpoint articles. So the webinars are like a typical seminar or presentation at a conference, but we try to make the presentations and we work with the speakers to make them very straightforward and so non-experts can understand them. And then we have a live Q&A where questions are asked. And all of these are recorded and freely available to anyone, anywhere in the world. The viewpoints have a slightly broader remit. So they started with the first one from Jim O'Neill, and we've had people from regulatory agencies to doctors. In fact, we have one coming out now in the next week or so on COVID-19 and how that's affecting antimicrobial stewardship. So very wide-ranging viewpoints to get facts out to people. One thing I would say with our viewpoints, it allows our experts to give their opinions as well, but they are evidence-based opinions.
GARDP is working on repurposing underused or forgotten compounds and is collaborating with industry. Can you tell us a bit more about why cross-sector collaborations and interdisciplinary research are important in the fight against AMR?
It's very clear that no one sector can solve the problem on AMR. There are many factors to it, and there's also many ways of resolving it. But if you want to get new treatments to patients, then it has to be a partnership. And if we take the simple drug development pipeline all the way from discovery through to preclinical development to clinical development, you can see there's very many actors there. Something could be discovered in an academic laboratory or in a small company. Then it will go through preclinical development. Historically, that again might be done in academia or at a small company or even at a large company. But over the last 10 or 15 years, this has really stopped happening in most large companies. And then the model changed that then a big company would either license or purchase the new drug and they would do the clinical development. And that also has stalled in recent years. So small companies are actually taking some of these drugs all the way to market. But what we're finding is that the funding for all of these parts of development is very hard to find. So by linking the different actors together, you're much more likely to succeed in getting a new treatment to patients, whether that's a repurposed drug or a new drug. So what GARDP does is we have various partnerships with academic groups, with small companies and with large companies and with clinical research organisations, manufacturers, all the way through the pipeline to help deliver these treatments to those that most need them.
Great. Shifting focus a bit. The current pandemic is shining a new light on the importance of achieving many of the SDG targets. Do you think COVID-19 is going to impact AMR in the long run?
So we're very unclear at the moment what the impact will be, but early anecdotal information from some centres is that secondary bacterial infections, such as we see with influenza patients, are not occurring in the numbers that we thought they may. Now, that's anecdotal data, and it may not be accurate because we have to remember that our healthcare workers are focused on treating patients with COVID. So they may not be taking the samples that would tell us one way or another. We need to know whether they've got a bacterial infection. And if you look at things like images of lungs, then it's sometimes the picture could be that of a COVID pneumonia and the effect it has on the lungs, or indeed a bacterial secondary infection. So we don't know. We do know that most patients with serious or severe COVID infections who are in hospital are receiving antibiotics. So many more patients are receiving antibiotics than they would have done at the same time period last year. They're generally receiving antibiotics that would be used to treat pneumonia. And so if we're not seeing the secondary bacterial pneumonias, we don't know if we're getting an increase in drug-resistant bacterial pneumonias. What is the impact on other bacteria in the body, such as those in the skin microbiome or the gut microbiome? We really don't know, and people are hypothesizing it will lead to an increase in the numbers of drug-resistant bacteria in those microbiomes and potentially any infections that they cause, but we simply don't know.
So what do you see as being the next big thing for AMR research?
Oh, that's a really good question, because there are many aspects to AMR research. So from diagnostics, I think that in the short term, there are not going to be any rapid diagnostics to tell when an antibiotic should be used with patients. So stewardship will remain difficult. The rapid advances in getting whole genome sequence data, and if we can get some really good integrated platforms on mobile devices, that would be even better, so that they could be used at the patient bedside or in a doctor's surgery, then that would be a big advance. So I think that's a big area that's under active research. The second one, of course, is new treatments. If we don't get new treatments, then resistance is just going to increase across the world. Of course, we do need to think, can vaccines play a role here? And they definitely can, but not for all infections. For some bacterial species, it's turning out to be incredibly difficult to get a safe and efficacious vaccine. But for others, and we've seen successful application of the pneumococcal vaccine, then that clearly plays a big role in reducing incidence of infection, and with it, drug-resistant infections by bacteria such as Streptococcus pneumoniae.
And what do you think the barriers to progress are?
The barriers to progress are very simple: money. It's been wonderful to see the support by funding agencies in many countries for early research. And a lot has gone into surveillance, the whole genome sequencing, and understanding mechanisms of drug resistance. Considerable funding has gone into schemes such as CARB-X for preclinical drug development and also some early clinical development. But there seems to be this big cliff edge of funding where getting drugs through phase 3, phase 4, which is so expensive, there's not enough funding around for that. I also think it's really, really important we continue research on understanding drug resistance, understanding how it's transmitted between bacteria, the types of environments that are so important and where the most risk is for transferring drug resistance from animals to people or vice versa. We've got to protect the food chain. That research still needs to be done, and that also takes money. So at the end of the day, all aspects of AMR need significant funding.
Thank you so much, Laura, for speaking to me today and telling us all about your research. It really has been a fascinating insight. Our second guest today is Dr. Anne Leonard, a research fellow at the University of Exeter. Anne's research is focused on understanding how catchment-level processes contribute to the transmission of antibiotic-resistant bacteria in coastal bathing waters. And today, We will be chatting about the importance and challenges of studying AMR in the environment. Hi Anne, thank you for joining me today. Can you tell me a bit more about your background, where you are based and your role?
So I'm a research fellow based at the University of Exeter Medical School, where I'm doing my NERC-funded Industrial Innovation Fellowship research on antimicrobial resistance in coastal bathing waters. I completed my undergraduate degree in biological sciences at the University of Exeter as well, but then I went on to do a master's in vector-borne diseases at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And then after a couple of years not working in higher education, I decided to come back and completed my PhD at the Penryn campus of University of Exeter Medical School. And that was on the microbiological health risks associated with recreational exposure to coastal bathing waters.
So what questions are you trying to answer with your research?
So I'm interested in the environmental dimensions of antimicrobial resistance. And this is to do with the role that the natural environment plays in the evolution, ecology, and epidemiology of antimicrobial resistance. So in my research, I focus on the dissemination and transmission of antimicrobial resistance in coastal bathing waters, because these particular environments are affected by pollution from land-based sources, which introduce various human and animal-associated microorganisms, as well as pollutants that might enrich for resistance genes. Also, coastal waters are an environment where large numbers of people go for recreation and where they come into direct contact with waterborne microorganisms, including those that are resistant to antimicrobials. And some of the research that we have published already in this area show that certain groups of water users swallow more water than other users, and that frequent exposure to coastal water in the UK is associated with an increased risk of gut colonisation by antimicrobial resistant bacteria. What I'm doing currently is I'm using targeted metagenomics to quantify the abundance and diversity of various resistance genes in the fecal indicator microorganism E. coli, isolated from a selection of popular bathing beaches in the UK. And I'm using beaches with a range of catchment characteristics because I want to understand which land-based processes are important drivers affecting the dynamics of antimicrobial resistance transmission. And if we know what these processes are, we can potentially make recommendations for effective strategies to mitigate the risk of environmental transmission in these locations.
Great. So what are some of the research challenges you're facing?
One of the research challenges we face is the accessibility and consistency of data, particularly environmental data and environmental data from other countries. So in some cases, there's a huge abundance of really detailed data that is freely and publicly available. It's absolutely amazing. That can pose its own challenge in terms of integrating those data sets and making sense of it. But the bigger challenge is actually when there's a complete lack of data, or there are some sensitivities around the data that mean it can't be shared. And another challenge that we have faced is the availability of funding for sufficiently powered cutting-edge research. In the past, it has been a struggle to convince the public and funders that research projects to understand the environmental dimensions of antimicrobial resistance are important. That said, I think this has improved in recent years. This is reflected in aspects of the UK government's most recent 5-year plan to tackle antimicrobial resistance, in which it is acknowledged that the spread and impact of resistance in the environment and between people and animals remains poorly understood. Further research does need to be done so that we can identify what actions need to be taken to reduce transmission and mitigate the impacts of AMR in various compartments.
On the same note, why do you think it's important for researchers to engage with policymakers?
I think it's really important to engage with policymakers, especially at the early stages of planning a research project and for applied research. It's important to know what knowledge gaps need to be filled in order for action to be taken so that these can be incorporated into the research project and to deliver relevant, actionable knowledge. And in my experience, policymakers have their own valuable knowledge and their own understanding of the issues and bring a unique perspective to the issues under consideration and have highlighted things that I have not previously thought of.
That's a very interesting perspective. How do you think your research addresses some of the Sustainable Development Goals?
The health of humans is intimately linked to the health of their environment. The environment is the water that we drink, the air that we breathe, and the food that we eat. Developing evidence-based strategies to reduce environmental transmission of antimicrobial resistance could bring about a plethora of co-benefits that impact the environment directly and subsequently all the Sustainable Development Goals.
And what do you think is the biggest threat to tackling AMR?
I think the biggest threat is inactivity or deprioritisation of antimicrobial resistance. But I am hoping that we learn from our experience of managing the COVID-19 pandemic. This is also, you know, an infection that has shown vast potential for spread, and for which right now there are no vaccines available and limited treatment options. We have seen the enormous impact this outbreak has had on society in terms of health, in terms of education, and on our economy, etc. And AMR has the potential to do exactly the same if appropriate and timely action is not taken. You know, these actions will require cooperation across sectors at the local, national, and global scale.
So how is the Sustainable Development Goal framework shaping your research field?
That is a really good question. I suppose they encourage us all to think more holistically about the research that we do and the impact it can have in other areas, perhaps ones that we haven't given as much thought to before. And as well as that, I think they are helping us at the core of what we do to centralise sustainability within our institutions.
Thank you so much, Anne, for such an interesting chat and for telling us more about the work you're doing at the University of Exeter. Thank you so much to both of our guests today on this special episode of Microbe Talk. It was great to hear about two different areas of AMR research and how important it is to the Sustainable Development Goals. Remember, if your research relates to AMR and you would like to be involved with our A Sustainable Future project, then please get in touch. We're collecting case studies on interesting research in this area and would love to hear from you. Please visit our website for more information. Thank you again for listening today, and we hope you enjoyed our three-part series dedicated to the role of microbiology in achieving the Sustainable Development Goals.